Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Few issues have polarized the world recently like Israel's war on Gaza. The West defends Israel's colonial settler project. The rest of the world looks on in anger and disgust. What we're witnessing is the end of the West's 500 years of global hegemony. It has lost moral authority. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest, Ed Martin in Washington. He is an attorney and former member of the Republican National Committee. In New York, we have Lionel. He is a legal and media analyst. And in Beirut, we cross to Ali Risk. He is a writer and political analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Ali, let me go to you first in Beirut. Lionel graciously has been on this program week after week covering the Gaza issue. And the first time I had him on, I asked him a question about his thoughts about it, and he said, everything has changed. And it's one of the reasons why I'm calling this program the Gaza Shift. In your mind, what has changed? And I mean, in your country, in your region, in the world, philosophically, however you want to approach the question. Go ahead, Ali.
Well, what has changed, first and foremost, is the invincible army reputation which Israel used to enjoy. Now, that reputation was shaken quite significantly by the previous wars, the 2006 war here in Lebanon. But I think Operation Al-Aqsa Storm by Hamas has completely shattered and brought that reputation to an end. And I think that has led to turning U.S. policy in the region upside down. You have the major U.S. ally in the region, which turned out to be more of a paper tiger, if we could say, confronting a movement like Hamas, which has much more limited military capabilities. This forced the U.S. into its own quagmire in the Middle East. You're seeing now what's happening in Yemen, how the U.S. appears to be almost isolated when it comes to backing Israel, even some European allies, very important European allies, by the way, like France, have distanced themselves from the U.S. support for Israel. Russia and China have some interesting stances in this particular conflict. We saw a delegation from Hamas visiting Russia, and I think both Russia and China wouldn't mind at all if they were able to further increase their influence and hence lessen the influence of the U.S. in the region, which has proven to be quite destructive. So I think all of these elements taken into account, I think point to this broader shift which we're witnessing, which is a result of the war in Gaza.
You know, that's a very interesting observations here. Lionel, you know, in my introduction, I talked about the lack of moral authority. And as we speak right now, the proceedings against Israel by South Africa on genocide is being spoken about and will soon be decided. It's very interesting to me how the United States has abandoned so many of the principles that you and I, as Americans, were brought up with, okay? And it's, you know, due process, rule of law, all of these things here, and they're being so easily abandoned. And then something closer to home for us is that, and freedom of speech is being attacked by people who we thought were defenders of free speech. Go ahead, Lionel.
A couple of things. Many citizens for the first time are asking themselves, why is there such a focus on Palestinians? And of course, they've not realized that this has been going on, you know, for 75 years, but for some reason they've awakened to this. This is the two points I always say. Number one, if we change the word Israel to France, it would be a completely different argument. People would be talking about things completely differently. They would say, you can't do that. This is wrong. But for some reason, this kryptonite third rail, kind of a Kevlar, don't go there attitude confounds people. And the second question I have is, can you think of any country in the world that would censure or expel its college students for saying something against the United States on their college campus? Have you ever heard of this? People are asking, women, you're being expelled from a school here because you disagree with another country's foreign policy? When did that happen? So as I said, the rules are inverted. It's schizoid. And it's about time that people ask themselves, wait a minute, who's in charge here? Who exactly is the client state of whom?
Well, I was going to get that. Ed, you want to jump in? You've been very patient. Go ahead.
I do. I want to sort of agree with everyone, and I want to point to leadership as a problem in America.
Yep.
But where we sit and look at a president who doesn't know whether he's coming or going on these positions. One day he's the staunchest defender of Israel. The next day he's not. I mean, he goes back and forth. Guys, but you mentioned due process. I have to tell you, in America right now, and put aside Trump versus Biden, in America right now, and I think I'm going to sound like an old-fashioned, bleeding-heart ACLU lawyer. I'm a lawyer. I never thought I'd say that. But the fact is, due process has been lost in this country. You can look at January 6th. You can look at how they prosecuted aspects of almost anything. And I'm willing to move all the way to the point where I say to myself out loud, did the federal prosecutorial system become so skewed against those without power, by the way, black and brown, drug dealers, all that, that we have to really rethink this. And I think we do. And you guys pointed to something. You said the media, the power of the media. America, we've been brainwashed by the media that we had to fight Ukraine, the Ukrainian war. It was the end of everything. And one day, pivot. We're going to go back to Israel and we forget about Ukraine. Now, my opinion, by the way, to say on the record, I think that what happened when Hamas attacked on October 7th is an existential crisis. And I think that Israel has a right to defend themselves. It's a different part of this debate. But I would like to just say, guys, we in this country, in America, are listening to our big tech and big media brainwash us that we have to move on to the next fight. We've got to, and the next fight is just whatever our narrative machine, big government, big tech and big media is telling us, and it's a disaster. Now, you could not like Trump, but Trump stood up to that machine, not always perfectly, but he certainly seemed to be on the side of Americans as opposed to on the side of I don't know who.
Well, you know, Ed, real quick, Palestinians have the right to protect themselves, too. But I get your point. I get your point.
Fair
okay?
point. I got you.
Okay. You know, Ali, you know, I'm, you know, people always ask me, you know, do you like talking about politics? I actually like culture and society more, okay, and philosophy, because I see an abdication of a moral stance here. I mean, the United States is also in the dock when it comes to genocide. And I don't think most Americans, the vast majority of Americans, understand that. And just to echo what Ed said, they'll never really know. Lyle and I talk enough to know that he's told me repeatedly that people basically don't have a clue, is that Hamas one morning woke up and decided to attack Israel. Well, that isn't the story here. So looking at it from the region here, obviously, Israel wants the U.S. to stay in the region. Obviously, it wants to fight its wars for it. But the region is resisting more and more. When Biden went to Israel, he was shunned by Arab leaders. That's a turning point. Ali.
Before I answer your question, just very quickly about the client state issue. The definition of a client state is a state which serves your interests. Now, if you look at it from that perspective, I fail to see how U.S. support for Israel serves U.S. interests, particularly with the current Netanyahu government. In fact, I think more the opposite is true. America's working more for the Israeli interests. So it appears that America, I'm not saying it's fully a client state, but it resembles more a client state of Israel, particularly now in this conflict and the stances taken by the Biden administration. With respect to your question about how the region is resisting the American pressures, that's true. You're seeing how the Yemenis, the Ansar Allah movement, how they haven't been deterred despite these attacks, despite the terrorist designation, all steps which have failed. And I think a very important point to realize is that certain movements in this region, in addition to Iran, you know, Hezbollah, Ansar Allah, Hamas, they do realize that the American public, and moreover, America in general, is not ready for another Middle East adventure. And I think that's not lost on these players when they pursue these. The leader
Peter,
of Hezbollah.
I want to not let your comments slide by, Peter, on this. Remember that famous interview where Trump was asked about Putin and they said, you know, is he a killer? And Trump said, killer. He's like, you're all killers. I mean, my point is that I agree with the assertion that everyone's in the shock, meaning we have to look critically at our own policies and say, what exactly is going on? You know, one of the lost debates in this country about presidential immunity is we know Obama was killing civilians with drones. He himself was saying kill them. Now, they could have a debate, but let's not pretend that there's not moral gravity to this. Bill Clinton was calling in bombs to Bosnia way too late because of political interests.
Ed, you're doing the indictment for me. I agree with you completely. I could give a hoot about Biden. Okay, who cares? Right. Okay, it is a policy here, and I'm going to go to Lionel here for a second here. It's a policy that has never been fleshed out and debated in America because people are afraid to say the truth. Well, let's just say it. Go ahead, Lionel.
Well, a couple of things here. First and foremost, I mentioned this before. If you ask most Americans, what are the roles of Bibi Netanyahu and Victoria Nuland in crafting American foreign policy? Most of them would say, I don't know who you're talking about, and that's absurd.
That's right.
Because we're living kind of in a 1950s world where we think we're the good guys and the bad guys. Another problem is, I'm sorry to say this, but when you say to people genocide, and my colleague here who is a fellow lawyer, I always look to the definition. Tell me what the ICJ means. You know, we have a law in this country called mayhem, and it has nothing to do with what you would think it would be. So when you look at genocide, people have this idea of the Holocaust or Auschwitz or something, and they will impart that particular ideation into what this is. When they look at what apartheid is, wait, South Africa accuses you of apartheid? Talk about an expert witness. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. So
right.
We have this idea. So we have this idea that somehow these terms, they conflict with our pedestrian street ideas of what this is.
Well, yeah, because genocide is something that is historical. That's how Americans have been taught it. Gentlemen, fascinating discussion. I'm going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelch. Remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, I want to go back to Ali in Beirut. Ali, I don't know if you had to suffer through watching some of the talks in Davos last week. It's insufferable stuff, unfortunately. Well, fortunately, I have people to give me clips, so I don't have to waste too much time. But Ali, when you look at Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, he's a pathological liar. Okay, now maybe that gets him by in Davos and his crowd. Okay, fine. We're not invited to such things. But, you know, to sit, you know, what I found really, I couldn't figure out what was more disgusting, what he had to say and how nobody confronted him with the nonsense that he was saying here. But in your part of the world, you know something about how a foreign policy over many, many administrations has lied to its own people in the interests of other countries, particularly this one country in Israel. So, again, the resistance that they talk about, I mean, they have the truth on their side. I mean, you can go through everything that Secretary of State said, and you can prove that it is not true. It's false. But I'm sure you don't have to be convinced because you just see it at face value. Lies. Go ahead, Ali.
Yeah, just quickly before, in the previous answer, I was saying just a point I have to make is that the leadership of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, in a previous speech said, America's busy in Ukraine. It has other priorities. Now is the time to work on making America withdraw. Now, that's part of a broader strategy, which aims, in the end, to put Israel in a very difficult situation because there's a conviction on the part of what they call the resistance axis, that without America in the region, that's when Israel will be really vulnerable and face an existential crisis. So you have now, I think, a new strategy by this axis in the region, which recognizes that the U.S. no longer has the resources or the time to invest that much in protecting Israel.
But Ali, would you also no more authority to be there anymore? Okay, the Iraqis want American troops out. Syria is being occupied illegally by the United States. There's a lot of elements that do not want the United States there. I would say, and I've said this for many years, yes, the U.S. should leave the Middle East. Would it get ugly? Yes, it would, but the region would heal itself. Having an outsider arbitrate everything the way it does in favor of one country is what is most disastrous for the region. Your thoughts, Ali?
I agree with you. When the history says, look at what is the U.S. policy. The U.S. policy in the end relies on military. Now, Obama, he referred to that at one time when you said, you don't need a hammer to solve every single problem. That was like an indirect criticism. One of the few bright spots of Obama's
approach. But he left office with seven wars. Okay, Donald Trump. Exactly. Donald Trump didn't start one. Okay, keep going, Ali.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that the U.S. administration's, even you have a U.S. former president who admitted to his fatal folly in American foreign policy, which only knows how to use military force, which hasn't served the region itself. And has it even served the American interest, by the way? Now, regarding Blinken, I think what's even worse than the fact that Blinken is lying, we all know that the American hypocrisy when it comes to the Middle East and when it comes to favoritism towards Israel. What is even worse for the U.S. is that they're no longer good at it. You no longer have diplomatic statesmen. You know, people who really are, diplomatic figures who know how to practice policy. If you look at this administration, Jake Sullivan, if you remember, just I think about a week before this current...
I think it was exactly 5 days, but keep going. Yep.
The region is in the most stable period ever. So I think that says a lot about the U.S. expertise towards this region and the fact that people who have genuine knowledge about the Middle East are being marginalized in favor of people who support, the general approach of blindly following Israel and continuing with the militarization.
Go ahead, Ed. Peter,
I think I cut off Ali last time, so I don't want her this time. I apologize. But I want to say a couple things. One is, you're right. We've raced to the bottom. We have the worst liars. They're not even good liars. They're not even good at the job. They're not sophisticated. I mean, they're just, as you point out, they're terrible. I would say something different, though. I think post-World War II now, and thankfully Kissinger is gone. I pray for his soul, but he's gone, thankfully, because we can stop talking about Kissinger and his ideas. And we can say to ourselves, what does America want now? And I think the big reset since the end of the Bush-Cheney era, which happened when Trump won, is what is, at least Republican, but I think American foreign policy. As you point out, where should we have American interests in the world? You know, this last December, we celebrated the 200th anniversary of the Monroe Doctrine. The Monroe Doctrine, if you look closely at it, was about the systems that were coming into the Western Hemisphere because they weren't compatible with America. But Monroe said, we're not coming into Europe because we don't want to mess with your stuff either. You figure it out for yourself. I think more and more Americans are saying, show us what the interest is in these parts of the world for us, and let us assess whether that's valuable. I would, another show, argue about how we do feel a certain moral debt to the Israelis, whether that's accurate or not. That's how America feels. And I'll finish with this. We've been brainwashed. I mean, even that, what I just described as a moral debt.
I don't see any obligation the United States has to Israel. Zero.
That's not what I said.
The Holocaust happened in Europe. It didn't happen in America.
I know, but that's not what I said. What I said was that's how Americans feel. I'm not saying we have a debt. I'm saying if you feel like you have a debt and you're electing politicians who are telling you that too, that's what that is. That's where that's part of it, where it's coming from. Most of it's coming from oil and control, as you all know.
It's coming from the donor class, okay? As usual, it's the donor class, okay? No, everything Ed said, I can agree with. But Lionel, you're always confronted with the question, do you condemn Hamas? That's the beginning and the end of the conversation. That's how they do it. Lionel.
A couple of things here. You must ask these bumper sticker playbook questions. Number one, does Israel have the right to defend itself? And you responded, does Palestine? And the answer is, oh, I never thought about that. That's number one. Number two, they think that they don't want to look at proportionality. Imagine if after the Gulf of Tonkin, we decided to nuke Vietnam, and we say, yeah, but it was the Gulf of Tonkin. People would say, that doesn't make any sense. We've forgotten that because the argument doesn't go past those two or three questions. Let me say something very quickly. We talk about the media. I invite all my friends to go to YouTube, which up till now has been pretty banal and rather anodyne and saccharine. And I said, just put into your search part Israel-Palestine and see what comes up. You will be amazed, and I am every day,
me too.
This burgeoning
me too.
And by the way, people that before October the 7th, I would not necessarily be listening to for a variety of reasons, who now show this exquisite brilliance as to the singular problems that we're looking at right now. There are people, there are journalists, there are new platforms that are absolutely laying siege to this classic statist Neanderthal media that we have had, who, by the way, isn't even interested because America, I'm sorry to say, is more interested in the Super Bowl and Taylor Swift than what's going on right now, much to their chagrin.
I don't even know who Taylor Swift is. But
don't say that, Peter.
I hear the name all the time. I have no idea who they're talking about here.
Better off okay. you don't.
But Ali, I want to finish on a really serious note here because, this we've heard it already, Israel has the right to defend itself. Okay, well, let's unpack that as quickly as we can on television. Well, Gaza and the West Bank are under occupation. So under international law, then self-defense gets a lot more dicey, okay? Israel, actually, as an occupier, is obligated to make sure that there is food, there is water, there is fuel. They're doing everything the opposite. So even the way it's presented in Western media, it is not they don't present a legal argument. On the face of it, it's a lie, too. Ali.
Exactly. Israel has always been portrayed as the victim in this region, although that argument is getting harder and harder to defend as a result of Israel's ongoing shift to the right. Even the American this administration is finding a bit of difficulty
yep.
defending that. I think an important point which we haven't made reference to yet is the ideological support which the Israel enjoys in America. You have a not so small segment of evangelicals.
Yep.
You have certain people who believe in a Jewish Christian alliance against Muslims. Those factors, I think, are also important factors when you want to explain the general approach, not just of American foreign policy, but also some members of the American population, correct me if I'm not mistaken, still have this stereotype view that identifies Muslims with terrorists, and that facilitates, I think, a foreign policy which is more favorable to I do believe it's changing. The protests in the U.S., I think, prove that. But this ideological element, I think it is a significant issue which should, deserve scrutiny.
Yeah, and Ali, American Jews and Jews in Europe are standing up, too. Not in my name. That was one of the most heartening things I've seen since October 7th. And I want to go back to you, partisan politics is always plays a role in all of this here. But, I find it really interesting, the people I have contact with the media, and Lionel knows this very well. I can talk to really far-left people, and I can agree with them on a lot of things. I'm a conservative here, but I don't like the prism in which the elites always trying to present issues here. Left-wing people, liberals, I can't find any common ground with, but left-wing people, conservative people, independent people, and it's basically this liberal establishment that controls the narrative. And as Lionel has pointed out, we're all punching holes in it. It's just ridiculous what they're presenting us, and that's why people are turning away. I haven't watched cable news now for a year. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I mean, a couple of things, a couple of observations. You started that question or comment with partisan politics. If you watch the Nikki Haley versus Trump conversation, you see a classic neocon, Nikki Haley, who is really spouting off all of those positions and sort of formulaically. I mean, she's like Anthony Blinken. You look at it and you say, you can't mean that, but she just spouts it off. On the other side, you have Trump. And Trump's ideology, if it's for our interests, I want to be strong. So I'll deal with the Saudis, right? I'll deal with Israel. And I think more Americans Americans, to the comment earlier about evangelicals, for example, I think more Americans in the conservative wing are looking up and saying, help me understand how American issues, American interests are at heart here. And, you know, for example, you would have never heard on the conservative side this conversation. The conversation went like this. Why are we giving Israel money? They got plenty of lending power. We don't have any lending power. Let them borrow money. Why are we sending them cash?
Well, all I can say is I say to Netanyahu, give Zelensky a call. He's got plenty
exactly.
of cash. Okay.
Exactly. That's
all
right.
All right, gentlemen. So right, gentlemen, yeah. have run out of time here. Fascinating discussion here. I want to thank my guests in Washington, New York, and in Beirut. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.